What happens when the person tasked with protecting a community discovers that the greatest threat has been hiding in plain sight for decades? Titus Crown thought he'd left his hometown's darkness behind when he joined the FBI. Now, as Charon County's first black sheriff, he's about to learn that some horrors don't stay buried. They just wait for the right moment to surface. Charon County, Virginia carries death in its very name. Named after the mythological ferryman who transported souls to the underworld, this small southern town has witnessed more than its share of tragedy. Indigenous massacres in 1805, a winter of starvation-driven cannibalism in 1816, mass poisonings, murder-suicides, and mysterious drownings that continue to this day. Most residents prefer to treat these events as unfortunate history safely contained in the past, but when a school shooting explodes into a serial killer investigation, Titus discovers that history in Charon County isn't past at all. It's still claiming victims. The call comes in, active shooter at Jefferson Davis High School. Titus arrives to find 17-year-old Latrell McDonald in crisis, making cryptic statements about archangels and someone called the Black Angel or Angel of Death. He mentions Mr. Spearman making them call out for God before charging down the steps screaming, "I have become death." Deputy Rogers' shotgun blast ends his life. Inside, beloved geography teacher Mr. Spearman lies dead at his desk, a small entry wound in his cheek, a massive exit wound in the back of his head. Titus examines Spearman's phone and discovers a hidden folder containing images of abuse and murder. The photos show Spearman, Latrell, and a third unidentified person wearing wolf masks, victimizing black and brown teenagers. The revelation transforms everything. Latrell wasn't a school shooter. He was a victim who became complicit, then tried to end it the only way he knew how. The community's beloved teacher was actually a predator, and somewhere out there, a third killer, the last wolf, remains at large. At Spearman's home, investigators discovered disturbing evidence: books highlighting abuse passages, pornography, and a hidden compartment containing a leather wolf mask and external drives. Most chilling is a painting titled The Secret Garden, a Gothic weeping willow in a forest clearing that Titus believes marks the burial site. His theory leads to Tank Billups' property, where a massive willow stands isolated. Excavating around it, they uncover a child's skull with a tortoiseshell hair clip, the tree's roots grown through the small body. By nightfall, they've found seven bodies, the children from the videos. The discovery devastates Titus. He returns home and violently chops wood, eventually erupting in a bitter argument with his father about Faith. "Faith broke my fucking heart," he shouts, revealing deeper wounds: his mother's painful death despite his prayers, his loss of belief in a just universe. Dr. Julie Kim reveals biblical phrases carved into victim's skin: "Cursed be Canaan," and "Our salvation is his suffering." Titus recognizes the latter from signs at six local churches, confirming the killer is local with religious motivations. The wolf imagery represents an antagonistic role in Christian theology. The killer sees himself as an angel of death, his rage both serving and directed at God. Titus's investigation leads to Holy Rock of the Redeemer Church on isolated Piney Island, where Pastor Elias Hillington lives with his family and collection of snakes. During their confrontation, Elias becomes defensive about "our salvation is his suffering" and threatens Titus with a snake. Neighbor Griselda Berry reveals that years ago, Elias and his wife suddenly presented a mixed-race boy as their own child. She describes how Elias and his brother Henry severely abused the boy until Henry was mysteriously locked in an outhouse with venomous snakes and killed. Shortly after, the boy disappeared. "That kind of hurt has to eat," Griselda warns. The killer isn't just a random psychopath. He's someone discarded, abused, and twisted by the very institutions meant to protect him. His crimes are both revenge and a desperate attempt to make sense of his suffering. The case escalates rapidly. Cole Marshall's mutilated body is discovered. A slaughtered lamb appears nailed to Titus's front door. Then Elias Hillington's corpse is found impaled on a wooden stake in a cornfield, naked, with "There is no escape from this savage place" carved into his chest, nails through his palms, and a dead snake in his mouth. The killer is no longer hiding. He's making statements. DNA evidence links the killer to the Cunningham family. At Blue Hills Plantation, Scott's mother, Polly Ann, reveals a devastating secret. 3 months after her husband, Horace, died in 1988, likely of AIDS, she became pregnant. The family intervened. Horace's brother, Lemuel, arranged for the baby to be given to the Hillingtons without Polly Ann ever seeing him. The Cunninghams considered the child impure and forbade contact. She visited once when he was 9, watching from afar as he violently crushed a crab with a rock. She tearfully admits she believes if she'd kept him, she might have prevented the murders. The child was named Gabriel, after an angel. The bitter irony, the Cunningham family's attempt to hide their impure bloodline created a monster. Gabriel grew up unloved, abused by religious fanatics, and became an angel of death. Meanwhile, racial tensions explode at the Fall Fest. Denver Carlisle drives a truck into counter-protesters, killing Reverend Wilkes and severely injuring Sandra James. Titus and Deputy Carla shoot Denver to stop the attack. In the chaos, Titus makes a connection. The summer murders coincided with school bus driver Royce Lazar driving Denver's delivery truck. Lazar, rearranged, spells Azrael, the angel of death. Gabriel Hillington and Royce Lazar are the same person. The final confrontation erupts when Royce kidnaps Calvin's 12-year-old son, LaVon. Titus and Deputy Tom find Diane Carter tied naked to a bed, her body carved with infected biblical scripture. Royce ambushes them with a shotgun, killing Tom and stabbing Titus before escaping. Severely wounded, Titus follows a blood trail to a trapdoor beneath a fake azalea bush. In the underground bunker, Royce holds LaVon at knife point. Titus kills Royce and saves LaVon, though critically wounded. As he lies bleeding, he hears his mother's voice urging him to survive, his mind weaponizing his deepest guilt to keep him fighting. 2 days later, Titus wakes in the hospital with his father Albert and brother Marquise beside him. He finally breaks down, sobbing that he couldn't save his mother. Marquise holds him, reminding him he saved LaVon and now must save himself. By saving LaVon, Titus symbolically atones for failing his mother, resolving his journey through action rather than absolution. 6 weeks later, Titus leaves Sharon County. He's resigned as sheriff, appointed Carla as his replacement, and accepted a teaching position in Baton Rouge. His relationship with Darlene ended when she realized he would always prioritize duty over their connection. Driving through town one last time, Titus passes the courthouse with its Confederate statue, Old Rebel Joe, propaganda erected in 1923 to intimidate black veterans. In a spontaneous act of defiance, he uses a tow strap to pull down the monument before speeding away, laughing all the way to the county line. This gesture symbolizes more than personal catharsis. It's a rejection of historical narratives that allowed evil to flourish. Throughout the novel, institutions failed the vulnerable. Former sheriffs missed serial killings. The Cunningham family discarded an unwanted child. Churches became sites of abuse. Yet the novel offers hope through Titus's reconnection with Marquis, Albert Crown's unwavering support, and Carla's appointment. Sometimes healing requires leaving behind places that tether us to trauma. Sometimes moving forward means toppling monuments to false narratives and driving toward an uncertain future. Reckoning is the first step toward redemption, and redemption begins when we finally refuse to look away.